Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to the bright center of the Star Wars universe. This is Aggressive Negotiations, the Nerd Party's podcast about all the wonderful internecine lattices and interpretations of the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is the bright, shining star that is known as Jedi Master, Matthew Rushing. Matt, how you doing?
Well, hello there.
There you go. There you go. My big, bright, shining star here on Aggressive Negotiations.
Wow. I don't know if I've ever had such a splendiferous introduction. It's just phenomenal to be here with you, John. And honestly, have been chomping at the bit to get to this episode. Because it was funny because we had something else completely different planned. And we both kind of came to each other on the same day and we're like, do you want to talk about this? Yeah, let's talk about that. We'll bump the other one. It was great.
It's the beautiful, beautiful thing of being so simpatico with a friend and a podcaster to know that when you bring an idea, it's pretty much going to fly. And but before we get to that idea, to keep the tease going, just want to remind you, thenerdparty.com/contact is how you can get in contact with us. Thenerdparty.com is where you can find the Nerd Party's shows, everything from Nerd Nuptial, which is geek life from a married perspective, to Filibuster, which features many great and terrific interviews with stars and creators from across all of film, to Missing Frames, to Great Shot Kid, to our new Doctor Who podcast, Time and Space, to SETI Alpha 3, our dedicated Star Trek podcast, to Owlpost, our Harry Potter podcast. I mean, good grief. We've got something for everybody on the Nerd Party and even more to come. And you can, of course, find the Nerd Party on Twitter, at Join Nerd Party. Find it on Instagram, the Nerd Party. And find the Nerd Party on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And if you want to reach out to the show directly on Twitter, we are at the Jedi Masters. Again, that's at the Jedi Masters on Twitter. That is our dedicated show account to talk to you. So all of that being said, enough suspense, enough of this palaver. Our topic tonight is going to be actually somebody that who's been a topic of a show in the past, Matt. Luke Skywalker.
He has. Actually, we have done a show on him before, but this one's slightly different. It's something that we've kind of been struggling with in some ways, but especially in light of The Last Jedi, is the Luke Skywalker enigma.
Exactly. The Luke Skywalker enigma, because when we recorded our Luke Skywalker podcast before, it was before The Last Jedi, and The Last Jedi has changed the landscape of who Luke is. Now, at this point in time of the story, who is Luke Skywalker? And so this, The Last Jedi was the answer to the question that was, according to J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy, the driving point behind The Force Awakens. Who is Luke Skywalker? So we come to find him, and I think that it's fair to say that a fair number of fans have found where Luke was to be a little, to use different adjectives, surprising, lacking to some people, unexpected. And others find it, enjoyably unexpected. Others, not so much. We're not taking a position here so much as discussing who he is and where he is now. And so, Matt, I know who I thought Luke was before The Last Jedi. I have a different interpretation of Luke now in terms of the story. Where are you with Luke Skywalker?
I don't know where I am with Luke Skywalker right now. It's complicated. I think is the Facebook status. Mm-hmm. And
indeed.
I think what I'm most is disappointed in Luke Skywalker.
Now, explain to me, are you disappointed in terms of regarding Luke as a character, like putting yourself in the shoes of somebody who's in the Star Wars galaxy and saying, I'm disappointed in you, Luke, and the choices you made, or are you disappointed in the expression of Luke as done in the film? Because I think those are two separate things, but tied together.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's actually both. So just the character, let's take in the Star Wars galaxy. If I'm Leia sitting down with Luke, I feel disappointed in Luke for going away to die when I need you. From cutting yourself off from the Force when I need you, when we need you, the universe needs you. Yeah, so did you make a mistake? Sure, bro, but put your big boy pants on and get back out here and be in the fight like I am. You know, that because Leia doesn't run.
Nope.
You know, Leia stays and does what she's always done, which is be committed to the cause. We don't really and so, at least as far as we know, it's not to the detriment of her family. She's not to blame for Ben, even though she wants to take blame for Ben, you know, that she should have known and all those things. You know, I think there's a lot of blame to go around. Most of it's still on Ben, because he makes the choice, right?
So, right.
In the end, it's him. But I if I was sitting down with my brother, I would be disappointed in my brother.
Mm-hmm.
For not being there, and for not facing up to his failure, to not being okay, like, okay, there's a failure, but I move forward. In the same way that Luke faced his failure on Dagobah and with Yoda on Dagobah and his training, and came back humbly to say, I'm ready to be trained again.
Right.
I made a mistake. You were right. I was wrong. I'm putting myself back under your tutelage. And Yoda says, you have that, what you need. You are a Jedi when you face Vader.
Yes. And I understand everything that you're saying. From my perspective, as somebody who has had a pretty darn close relationship with my brother, I have both been in the chair of the one who has made a tremendously bad decision and needed my sibling to sit there and be like, okay, I love you, I respect you, and what you did was stupid, but we got to move on. We got to make this right. And I've also been on the other side of the table, like, you know, putting my hand on his arm and saying, hey, come on, man. And so I think it's right to point at the family dynamics here, because there is, I think, there's a consistent thread of Leia wanting to blame Snoke and Han blaming himself and Luke blaming himself. So it seems in this chain that Leia's the only one of the three that is, if there's any exterior blame to Ben, she's assigning it toward the evil dude. And so it's like, yeah, okay. But my question becomes, this is a delicate thing, because, conversations have been very heated, so I'm trying to stay away from any heated language or anything like that. I'm coming strictly from a cold, analytical standpoint. I would have gotten it to this point differently. I think that there's a more natural pathway for Luke to have followed, where he could still have this failure and inadvertently create Kylo Ren. And I think that if they had taken a different pathway for Luke, you can still have him make the mistake, but still have him do it in such a way that people, I think that people have a fundamentally unsettled notion of Luke, with the idea of somebody who even for an instant would light his lightsaber to kill somebody while they were asleep, whether it was his nephew or anything like that, because it's such a tremendous step backward for Luke in terms of character development. And I think that maybe that is sort of what gets to some fans, is it's the same thing that bugged a fair number of people with The Force Awakens, of how did everything regress suddenly?
Right.
Why is it suddenly that all of our victories that we last saw in Return of the Jedi seem to have suddenly stepped far backward and become this?
So there's been a lot of talk out there about the idea of Lucas's plan, right? And that this is, it's come out that really, this is really just following the plan Lucas had. You know, Lucas, this is
right.
This is what he had in mind. And so I wanted to talk specifically about that because I think it has a lot to do with what you're discussing. This is Lucas's actual thought process, is that episode 7 was going to have Luke in it. So we're not waiting till episode 8. So one, that's a huge change. Two is that this Jedi killer is the one responsible for bringing down his temple.
Right.
And it turns out that that is the Solo's son. There's no mention whatsoever in any of this that, you know, he goes to kill his son. It's that this Jedi killer has turned on him and destroys his temple. And that gives Luke a lot of consternation as to how this could happen. And so he goes in search of the first Jedi temple and waits there in contemplation, trying to figure out what to do. And of course, in that time period, he's kind of depressed. I think he's also worried. Doug Chang talked about the idea of, you know, he's always had this darkness in him, Luke, because Vader had it too. And I'm sure part of that has to do with, did I pass some of that on to Ben without knowing it? Am I culpable in this? And then a student would show up, a young girl in the storyline. It was named Kira, who turns into Rey. And through that process, then you would get Luke basically getting his mojo back. Luke finding himself again. And by the time that episode 7 ends, he's back. Like, Luke is back to the way that you expect him to be. So he's had this moment of doubt and consternation, but Rey basically has helped him see the light again.
Right.
Now, to say that that has anything to do with what we got in The Last Jedi is,
you know,
it's
such a delicate conversation. I wish it wasn't, but I agree with you. I think that what it is it's taking something, and somebody has, this is probably a clumsy analogy, but I have these Lego pieces and I have in my mind, I'm going to make this car. And I don't make it, but I have all of the pieces there. And then somebody takes it and they say, you know what would be really kind of cool is a flying car. Well, the pieces I left there are there. And so you could say, these are the pieces I left. And so that flying car is in a way mine. But it's not, because it's assembled differently from the pieces that I had there. I think that would that be a fair analogy for what you're trying to say here?
Yeah, because the way I was thinking of it, it would be as though you created a story out of a couple of bullet points.
Right.
So, because that's really what you come down to, is that there are a couple of bullet points that turn into The Last Jedi, but the thing is that by changing episode 7 and moving that story over to episode 8, you have fundamentally changed the entire course of Luke Skywalker and the storyline, because, again, we end up with a story where Luke is so actively responsible for creating Kylo in his action of going to kill him. And I honestly believe in my heart of hearts that's something that Lucas would have never, ever conceived of as being something for this character to do.
I agree. I've always gone to bat and said, you know, he said it was just for a passing moment and then he thought better of it and Ben happened to wake up. I don't know how you don't wake up for the sound of a lightsaber igniting, but hey, I mean, I wake up to this, you know, if you play the sound of a lightsaber igniting, I wake up all excited. I'm like, "Wee, what's going on?" And I agree with you, especially because it's such an odd moment, an odd beat to choose, given the fact that Luke himself, it would have been arguably easy for Obi-Wan to look at Luke and say, you know, and like sneak into the Lars homestead and be like, maybe this kid is going to be a little more trouble than he's worth. So it just seems to be an odd space.
I just want to answer real quickly. Anybody who says, well, Obi-Wan and Yoda gave up, that is absolutely 100% categorically untrue. they specifically, and we even see it in Rebels, Obi-Wan's job is to watch over Luke Skywalker and make sure that he grows up safely. And
right.
that the Force wills whatever it will so that he will be ready whenever the time comes, either he or Leia, right? Obi-Wan's job, though, is giving up the rest of his life to make sure that one child is safe. Yoda's one job is to make sure that he's alive whenever one of those twins is ready to be trained.
Right.
And they are not giving up. They are waiting right. at that point for the will of the Force. If you're calling that giving up, well, Luke really does give up. I mean, he's there yeah. to die.
Obi-Wan and Yoda are playing the long game, and that's very apparent at the end of Revenge of the Sith, you know, yes. where Yoda's like, into exile, I will go. And he even says to Obi-Wan, I have more training for you. It's not like they just ran off and stopped doing their thing. Yoda's like, we're going to play it on the down low, and then when the time's right, you know, we're ready.
Yeah, Obi-Wan's just sitting there twiddling his thumbs, you right. know, playing his Atari.
But, No, that's another topic. But the entire thing is I respect anybody's view on any film. You know, you like what you like, you don't like what you don't like, and you have, you know, your discussions about it, and it's all cool. We're all adults, presumably, and we can all have these conversations. I wish it wouldn't break down into things where people feel like they have to rewrite the interpretations of previous works in order to justify a love of the current work, because I think that is reductive, and that shifts the argument into taking it back to arguing what we're doing right now about older films instead of right. this one. Like it's like an argument deflection. I'm not a fan of that. I will say that I have spent a lot of time thinking through how would I have gotten Luke, like I'm coming into it with the mindset of how would I have had Luke get to that point and still accidentally create Kylo without the moment they chose in the movie. Now, of course, this is fan conjecture. No, I haven't made a film. No, I didn't make this film, that sort of thing. But I can't help but wonder if we're going to go down this road, it would have been to me more interesting. And it struck me as I was doing a rewatch recently of Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2. I would have made him more like Pai Mei in Kill Bill Volume 2. Are you familiar with Kill Bill Volume 2?
I am not.
Pai Mei is this old master who lives out in the middle of nowhere, who trains Uma Thurman, who trained these other people. And basically, he's just such a hard ass that his students love him but hate him. You have to, like, you know, climb the temple steps to get up to him. And then he, like, his first thing is to, like, show dominance and stuff. I'm not saying go that far. It's an old Kung Fu stereotype. Like, master, yeah, I've come to train. Right. And the master, like, you know, beats you up a little bit and is like, you must say. But imagine Kylo being created by a Luke Skywalker who, with noble purpose, is that taskmaster. Mm-hmm. I did it. I made it here. I am the teacher. And he realizes that the problem isn't that he tried to kill anybody or anything like that, but he wound up creating Kylo by being more like Mace Windu than right. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
See, and this is the thing. So I was talking to a good friend of mine, and we were batting ideas back and forth. And I think, you know, a lot of people have made, I'm going to sidebar, but it's really going to have everything to do with Luke. Mm-hmm. The idea that it doesn't matter who Snoke is. But even in the story we get, Snoke is the key that creates everything happening, because the dialogue, Luke says, Snoke already had his heart.
Right.
How? So my thought process is that if you get from the backstory that Snoke was this kind of angel of light type character, like everybody loves him, he's not ugly or anything, he's a gorgeous character, you know, and everybody is fooled by him. Make him kind of the anti-Palpatine in that sense, like, you know, the Palpatine of
right.
the prequels and the original trilogy. He's not old, he's not deformed or anything. He is this bastion of hope, everybody thinks. Even Luke is fooled by this guy. So that when he steals Ben away and corrupts his heart so Ben destroys the temple, Luke is shattered. How did he not see it? How did he,
right? How do you
how
out?
Did he
right?
How did he miss it? So it, you give Luke a reason to want to go into exile, so he can figure out what the heck happened.
Like, well,
how did he miss it? So that that it makes Luke seem smarter because the villain is so powerful and scary, and it also makes Luke's journey to find an answer a very important story point, because he would feel as though he is completely missing something about the Force that he wouldn't suspect this guy.
Right, where he could feel like, oh my gosh, the reason this happened is because I didn't get enough formal training of my own. I have to
right,
go back
exactly.
and find out what Yoda couldn't pass on to me. I really like where you're going with that, and if anything, it reminds me a bit of Lord of the Rings, that Snoke could be a Sauron type.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
hey, look, I can make
even,
some rings
even,
for you.
Kind of like that Thranduil type character in The Hobbit, you know, mm-hmm. in the films that they did, you know, it, where he's a beautiful character on the outside, but inside he's this evil thing. And look, the literature has already been setting this up, this idea that there was something outside the galaxy that was dark or whatever. What if he found his way in, is able to conceal that darkness? Because Leia even makes it apparent in The Force Awakens, they knew who Snoke was. You know, what
right.
if he had been part of the New Republic and all of these things? Like, you create a story where this guy, and he doesn't even have to be a Sith. That's the other thing.
Well, and
he undermines
right.
everything that's happened. And again, it makes him like, I feel like an even scarier Palpatine.
Sure. But the thing is, I still tend to stay away from that. Like I'm that's not to, you know, to take anything away. Like, I like what you're saying here. Like, I'm thinking in terms of, we're going to give very little information in here, and I'm actually okay with very little information about Snoke here, except having a couple more lines. I still would have structured it differently so that when Kylo and Rey are seen touching hands and Luke freaks out, just a line of, he says, that's how it happened. I don't know why it's happening with you, sort of thing. Like, to tie that moment together, I think brings it even closer. So I don't need like a full backstory of Snoke in this film. They can always address it by, I mean, for all we know, Rian Johnson is going to make a trilogy of Snoke, you know, when it comes out, and fill in and will that therefore redeem some of the choices in The Last Jedi? I don't know. But like, staying with Luke, it's one of those things where I think that the conversation as well, and I think it's necessary to say this, is that any criticism of The Last Jedi is seen as a rejection of any of its themes. I mean, I think that we're both completely comfortable with the idea that Luke failed in some way. We talked about that ad nauseum after The Force Awakens. Well, why would Luke run? And I was like, oh, well, you know, obviously something happened and he wasn't happy, you know. So it's not the themes that we're responding to here. I think that the choices that Luke made don't feel authentic to what came before. And I think that ties to something that we talked about over on the 602 Club before, in that this doesn't, or actually I talked about it with Mike Schindler here on Great Shot Kid. This doesn't occur in a vacuum.
Right.
It is. I think The Last Jedi is an incredibly unique film in the Star Wars firmament, specifically because it both relies on what came before and doesn't want to. And so I think that can be, at a fundamental level, what certain fans react to, including myself, react to as well, where it's like, you can't have it both ways. You're one or the other. And mm-hmm. I think that you alleviate a lot of those things by having Luke have made different choices. I think that works it into the flow of things a lot better.
Well, and I like that you mentioned that, because and I've said that same thing before, mm-hmm. and I was on that train in The Force Awakens, because I felt like they were trying to create, I do feel like that film, is as much as I like it more now in light of the Last Jedi. I do feel like it also had that problem of like kind of ignoring the fact that you can't unring the bell.
Right.
The original Star Wars trilogy does happen in a vacuum, right?
Yep.
But they successively build off each other. And then the prequel trilogy builds off everything you knew from the original trilogy and brings you to that point. So if you're going to do a sequel trilogy, you have to start with the context of having those six films. Those six films have happened. And then you also have to realize that if you're going to have a huge time gap, you have to find a way to logically, as the storyteller, fill in that time gap so that you know why, where, how, and what the motivation of every single character is, where they are the moment The Force Awakens opens, and where they're going to be the moment that Episode 9 ends.
Right. Tolkien knew where Lord of the Rings was going to end, even when I didn't the first time I was reading it. He knew when he's, you know, things change along the way, things get altered, but he had an idea. He knew where it was going.
J.K. Rowling knew where Harry Potter was going to end.
Right.
George Lucas knew where Star Wars was going to end.
Well, after the first one was a huge success, he was like, okay, yeah, now I'll commit.
But I also think, too, because I want to ask you this. So, Luke, why is Luke seem alone in this? Like, because we know that there are three good Force ghosts that we saw at the end of Return of the Jedi. Luke is not alone.
You are not alone. Sorry. Every time somebody says that, that song pops in my head. This is the thing that I go back and forth on is I'm more okay with him having no Force ghosts show up than one. And in terms of that story point, it's a give and take. I even in the Heir to the Empire book, like Obi-Wan says to Luke, eventually I got to move on, dude. I can't hang out here forever.
Well, and they made that clear. Like they set up the rules of how it works. But here we're left thinking when Luke says, Master Yoda, you know, you get the feeling like Master Yoda showed up before. So me though, unless you find a way to take that off the plate like the EU did, I'm left thinking as a fan, Luke should not be building this new Jedi Order by himself. He shouldn't be going on all of these like excursions around the galaxy looking for Jedi stuff alone. He's got Anakin, he's got Obi-Wan, he's got Yoda, and we know Qui-Gon.
Well,
so like he's got all of these masters of the Force who can appear whenever they want.
Well, I think
that impart information to him,
and that's why I think if Yoda doesn't appear, then it's not an issue at all, because you're not left there saying, well, wait a minute, is he just showing up for the first time in 30 years?
I mean, you might not, but I would still think that, because if we got this story, I would still wonder where they had been.
And that's where you and I are going to differ,
right?
You know, and that's fine. Like, again, fans can differ on these things, and
I'm not telling you you're an idiot or anything. It's like, no, I get it.
Hey, listen, I already know I'm an idiot. Well, and so, you know, you don't need to repeat the obvious. Come on. I think that there is the fundamental thing that I think that a lot of fans like myself, and I don't want to speak for you, but I'm going to presume you as well. I think one of the things that is the hardest to find any way to alleviate, and there are fans who have done this and they're fine with it, but from my perspective, setting aside every other sort of quibble or comment that I might have made along the way, I don't think that it's unfair to say that it's not fair. And I think this gets back to the trying to have your, you know, have it both ways. It's not fair to take away Luke Skywalker's victory. Like, never from Return of the Jedi, I knew who he was. I knew what he had done. And he was the we are the champions. We made it. Celebrate the love. I don't find any guilt or shame in saying it's not fair to take that away from me, because my whole life, that's who Luke Skywalker has been. And I understand, again, have him fail, have him have a problem, but doing it the way that it was done is what I have responded to mostly. Is you had better ways to get there without leaving me feeling like, oh, forget Return of the Jedi. That's, yeah, you know, that's no big thing. It's like, no, that's a thing. That happened.
Yeah.
And Rey even says, oh, you redeemed Darth Vader. How can you not redeem Kylo? And Luke even says when he goes back, I'm not here to save him. Well, I mean, honestly, you're not there to do anything because you're not actually there. But it is a completely fair expectation of a fan to say, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel right to me.
It reminds me of that quote from The Patriot where he's like, I've long feared that my sins would return to haunt me and the cost would be more than I can bear. And I feel like that's kind of where Luke is at this moment.
Right.
You know, that this failure of Ben. And let me just say this. I think, you know, I would have loved if the episode 7 had been much more with what Lucas had in mind. And I'm sure, and what I feel from that is that we would have gotten a lot more of this backstory, because I feel like Lucas understands the need to have context. I mean, we get it all throughout. When we need it, we get it through the PT and the OT.
Sure.
So you could have easily just made it a bit more overt that Snoke had turned Ben's heart and Luke had gone down there to confront him. And I think it was you who first mentioned this idea, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant, which is that Snoke is just there communing with Ben the same way we saw him with Ben with
right.
Rey. And Luke freaks out at that moment, and Ben does what Ben did when he woke up, which is he brings the place down and he burns that mother down and he kills people. Like, I think that still creates a story point that
yes.
shatters Luke Skywalker, that leads him to need to go find out how the heck he got this wrong.
Right.
And does it in a way that does not hurt the mythology of Luke Skywalker, because that's the other thing I've been thinking a lot about, is this idea of myth, and that Star Wars is based off of all of these myths and this mythology, and this does not feel mythic. Luke feels like a broken old failure now instead of a mythological hero, and to say that we don't need mythological heroes anymore is a misnomer, because Lucas himself created Star Wars in the 70s because he saw a lack of children having stories about heroes that could teach them about what was right and what was wrong,
right.
and giving them something to look up to. Luke Skywalker was that character. Han Solo became that character by the end of Return of the Jedi. Leia was that character. You know, Chewie was that character. Obi-Wan Kenobi, all of these characters were those characters that we got to look up to. Now, did they not ever fail? No, we watched them fail. But we still, by the end of that trilogy, we knew them to be heroes who had overcome their own inadequacies, their own failures, to become greater than they were before. And I feel like we're not given that opportunity with what we get in The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens for Luke Skywalker again. He just kind of still feels like a failure to me.
I would put it out there that I think that the first hint of this sort of storytelling tendency in these films comes with Han, because again, this can all be addressed in dialogue or the mere altering of a scene. I ran down and I saw Snoke communing with him the way Ben was just communing with you, Rey, and that's why I lost my mind, and it led to all of the troubles, and you know, I overreacted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you roll it back to The Force Awakens, one of the things that, even though I came to love that film, one of the things is there's a bit of dialogue in it that I always wish was different. And I will always wish was different, because in terms of Han and Leia's being separated, they simply say, oh, we reverted to who we were. And I'm like, oh, so you simply needed them in this point, and so therefore they are. Okay. And I get a similar sense with Luke, where well, we needed him to be in this point to tell, to do this. So this is where we're going to have it. And it feels less organic and more forced. Whereas with Han and Leia, you could have easily said that, you know, well, we broke up because we just couldn't come to terms after Ben. Like, how relatable a story is that in our modern mythos of society, that, you know, the loss of a child or a child going wrong breaks up a marriage because they just, right, you know, it creates so much emotional discord. So I think that Han becomes your canary in the coal mine in terms of what you're talking about. And the canary in the coal mine in terms of, you know, my whole thing about like just a couple of tweaks of dialogue here or there, and you've sort of evened things out. As a practical matter, and I know that this is a rabbit hole, but it's really been on my mind. And I think there's a simple answer, but it doesn't, I don't know if it works for you or not. But you mentioned, you know, Ben brings the house down. And we see that in this. You know, Ben brings the house down to protect himself in a sense. But then while Luke is under the rubble, he gets up and he takes some of the Jedi with him to be the Knights of Ren. He kills the others, and then he burns down the temple. Which has led me, as I have thought about it, you know, I was thinking about it coming out of the theater, and it's like a thought that keeps recurring. How long was Luke under that rubble? How quickly was Kylo able to destroy that place?
Yeah. Apparently, it was not built to code.
Yes. No OSHA regulations in the Jedi
absolutely.
Temple.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That is a really good point, you know, and I could understand Luke being knocked out after what happened.
Well, then how was Ben not knocked out?
I don't know. Okay. You're absolutely right. It becomes a story point where you're just like, that feels so muddy.
Right.
I think the thing that you hit on is that so much of this doesn't feel organic because I don't feel like I have an understanding of the greater whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me put to bed something that I've been hearing, which is, and I'm kind of tired of hearing it. Well, that the original trilogy didn't. Look, mm-hmm, George Lucas was a genius, okay, in creating.
Is. He's still
original,
alive. Is. Yeah. Is.
Is a genius, okay? He creates a story based off something that we all know, the hero's journey. So we instinctively know our main character. And then every other character in that story is an archetype. Everything in that story, the empire, it's all an archetype. You know what makes it so great? I don't need it explained to me because I already instinctively, yes, understand every single part of that story.
Yeah.
The PT is actually like that too, because it's the archetype of the death of a republic. Now, it takes a bit more explaining, so Lucas never shies away from having dialogue that explains things in his story in the prequel trilogy. The sequel trilogy, on the other hand, has no archetypes and therefore needs the major story points and the structure of the and where the galaxy is to be explained so I understand it. But they've tried to have the vacuum, put it back in the vacuum seal tube, but they can't because we all know there's supposed to be context. So what we end up with is something that feels hollow because the moment you push through, you're in the center of the chocolate bunny, and there's nothing there.
That's it. No, that's it. You do. You have your finger right on it there, in that in the original Star Wars trilogy, everybody is, it's a very clearly defined set of roles for everything and everybody, and a very clear story arc with everything. And if you're going to go into territory, which is completely valid, and I dig it, and I like going into new territory. None of what we are saying here today has to do with rejecting the idea of going into new territory or breaking new
absolutely
ground.
Not.
Totally
absolutely
cool
not
with it. Like, I hate the fact that I feel like I have to qualify that constantly.
Well, but, and that's what I hoped for. When I saw the trailer for The Last Jedi, I thought, okay, I've never seen stuff like this before. That's what had me excited. I thought we were finally going to be in that place with The Last Jedi. That's where I was going into it.
But specifically in terms of Luke, no, you didn't have excessive explanation in the original Star Wars trilogy, or even in the prequels. I wouldn't consider any of the explanation excessive, but if you're going to look simply at the original trilogy, there wasn't excessive explanation, not just because you didn't need it, but because everything was so clear and it was hero, villain, guy who turns from, you know, backstabber to hero. Like, they're very easy characters to explain. They're very accessible. More gray area in the prequels, and that's why there's more explanation. And in the sequels, if you're going to deal with characters who are all washes of gray, then you do need more explanation of what's going on with them, because they are not those very clear, bold lines for their story arcs. And so this is something where I will explain using Rian Johnson's own works. Okay? If you go back to Brick, Brick has characters all in a state of gray, and it's a very complex story. But there's a lot of explanation, especially as it gets closer to the end, to make sure you understand where everybody stands in relation to everybody else. It's a tribute to noir film. It's great. I love Brick. Looper, I don't love as much because it moves into the more gray areas, but doesn't paint everybody's path clearly enough.
It doesn't give you the foundations you need to feel comfortable with where everything's going to go.
Correct. And I think that winds up being reflected in The Last Jedi as well. And specifically, since we're talking about Luke, with Luke. If you're going to have Luke at this point, fine. I'm cool with it. I'm totally great with it. But it's going to matter very, very much how he got there, why he got there, and how that's explained. That's all going to be very key to the story. Very, very key to the story.
Well, and so the other thing that doesn't make sense to me is that by Luke not trying to rectify his mistake whatsoever, I mean, he says that he's gone to Octu to die.
Right.
How can Luke be okay with, I mean, is that why he shuts himself off the Force, so he can stop feeling how many people the First Order is murdering day by day?
Well, at the very least, it's an explanation for, because it, as part of one of the explanations or apologetics for Luke's character choices here, it's pointed out, well, he didn't rush out to save Han. Well, it's specifically said he shut himself off to the Force. He doesn't sense Han's death.
Right.
There's no reason for him to sense Han's death because he's not plugged in.
But that's my point. Is it that did he begin to feel the First Order taking action in the galaxy? And he was like, you know what? I don't want to feel it. I'm just going to shut down.
The First Order existed before Kylo turned.
Right. No, but that's my point. Once Ben runs away with Snoke, why isn't he trying to rectify a situation? Because not trying to do anything about Kylo and Snoke allowing the First Order to reign, they're killing millions of people.
No, but see, here's another thing. Well, I mean, the Jedi, you know, the galaxy, you know, the Republic, there were, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, this and that and everything. They were never debilitated by the killings going on in the Clone Wars and stuff like that. But I will say that, you know, you've given me another idea here. How cool would it have been if Luke's fault, the way that Snoke got a hold of Ben, was that Luke kept getting called away to deal with things, and Snoke kept creating problems with the First Order, knowing that Luke was going to go deal with them, so that he could sneak over telepathically and be like, hey, Ben, you know, he's not here right now. I can show you truly cool things. And then Luke comes back, and it leads to what we've been talking about, where it's like, exactly. Oh my gosh, you're there talking to him. And that ties everything in. And what really just, I think that speaks to, is our desire here to preserve Luke as a hero in some way, to give an explanation for him as a hero and still a failure. Because you can have both.
Right.
And I think I think maybe that's
because,
the
I mean, I don't think of Yoda, even though he failed in the Clone Wars.
Right.
Once we get to Empire, I don't think of him as a failure anymore.
Right. Maybe that is. That is the thing, you know, but I mean, we've been saying it over and over again this whole time. We're fine with where Luke is. We're fine with him failing it, right. But it just matters how he got there. And
well, and I this is something else that I'm thinking. So again, Luke not acting and not basically doing what a Jedi is supposed to do becomes responsible for not taking responsibility for his own actions. He's allowed evil to rise, and that's the famous statement. All it takes for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. He helped create a problem, but then he's not willing to help fix it. One, he's not willing to help try and redeem his nephew, which he's for some reason deemed irredeemable, which I don't get, because, you know, if Space Hitler can be redeemed, I'm not sure how, you know, one emo kid can't be redeemed. But he's also not actively trying to find a way, it seems like, to fix the mistake that he make and keep millions to billions of trillions of people not dying.
I get what you're saying with that, but I really do think that another model of Luke that would have worked better and still made him aloof without being where he was when we meet him in The Last Jedi is I think that we saw something that would have worked perfectly as a model, as a baseline model already. And I think maybe that's something that's in the back of my psyche. But Tron Legacy, with where Kevin Flynn is, can't act. Why can't you act? Because I know as soon as I act, they act. And that's going to be a problem. Like, so Luke has actually pulled himself out as a matter of detente. If Luke stays out, the Force stays in stasis. And Snoke and Ben and the Knights of Ren, you know, like everything's concentrated in Luke. And he basically can say, if I don't enter the battle, everything stays the same. Nobody wins. You know, it becomes like war games. The only way to win is not to play.
Well, you know. And then Kevin realizes that he can't anymore once his son enters the picture.
And that's the role that Rey can play
And it seems like Lucas almost had that in mind with his idea.
But even on top of that, you create a really brilliant sort of question of, I mean, fans could debate till they were blue in the face. Well, was Luke right to come back? Because when he does come back, everything does go to hell. And so, like, would it have been better for him to be, you know, non-interventionist and pacifist about everything? Or did he need to come in with his saber and do all of these things? And I think this is the thing that really is why it gets so splitting to fans, is because fans can debate story and points and plot and all of those sorts of things. I think that the reason the discussion has been so acrimonious is because we're talking about a character interpretation, and not just any character interpretation, a character interpretation of a character who has been beloved by people like me and you for literal decades,
most of my life. Yeah.
And the thing is, I already know that there's an easy counterpoint. Well, you're just too comfortable in this, and so you're just reacting to that. But again, to something we said earlier in this conversation, it's not unfair for us to have that sort of expectation about where a character might go, who has been this for so long.
The other part of this is that I think I read it somewhere. There's an article about this idea of Logan did the Force Awakens story better. That the idea of Logan being the aging mutant, that's in hiding. He's hiding a friend of his. He's just trying to stay on the down low. He doesn't want any more trouble. And then he has the young girl come to him who needs his help. And he sacrifices everything to make sure that not only does he train her in some ways, but he gets her where she needs to go and tries to encourage her to do better than he did. And that storyline was such a perfect send-off for that character. And I think that's kind of what we're saying, is that we wanted that perfect send-off for our favorite character, and that we didn't feel like we got that. And so what I think it's so much so interesting about our conversation is that absolutely 100% the Last Jedi story about Luke is not the only way it could have gone.
Right.
And what I think we talked about was a clear look, we might be massive fans and we might really care, but I also think that we have been so steeped in storytelling structure of Star Wars and the way it's told that one of the reasons that we haven't been responding as well to this is because it didn't necessarily feel in line with where we had come from.
Right.
And if you're going to do episodes of Star Wars, there's no problem with having the expectation that they are going to have that kind of structure and storytelling perspective that they've had before. Now, Lucas was really good about like trying to push the boundaries of what Star Wars was. Just go watch the Clone Wars and the Mortis trilogy or something like that, or the Yoda arc at the end, or giving Obi-Wan a love, or all of these things.
And I'm sorry to cut you off, but for anybody who hasn't watched it, like, you know, we trumpet the Clone Wars all the time. It's still on Netflix. If you have Netflix, you have access to everything that the Clone Wars did. Jump in at any point and you'll see exactly what Matt is talking about the fact that Star Wars has been broken and remolded over time. Absolutely has.
So the fact that we would kind of expect the sequel trilogy to do some of those things, I don't think is unexpected either. The Force Awakens kind of came in and gave us a bunch of interesting questions to say that fans should not expect the sequel to follow up on the questions of the foundation of a new trilogy is, I think, kind of ludicrous. To say that those are unimportant, you're diminishing the film that came before then instead of enhancing it. And I think that's the other thing that I kind of have a problem with. I didn't love the Force Awakens, but I didn't hate it. And I thought JJ had set up some really interesting questions that I was very interested to see play out. Where are we going to go with this? Like, where was Luke? Who is Luke Skywalker? And I guess we should probably start to wrap this up. So I guess I want to challenge you with a very interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of started with one. I want to end with one.
Okay.
Who is Luke Skywalker by the end of The Last Jedi?
Man, that is, I don't know if I can answer that. He's not who I thought he was. And I can honestly say that I watched Return of the Jedi, part of it, with my kids. I just had it on. I was like, and I had it playing. And I still can't get to point B from that point A. That being said, if I'm put in a corner, I mean, the only answer I can possibly give is, who is Luke? Luke's a human being. You know, I guess that's all I can say. And that in and of itself, I think, is disappointing to me. Because if you asked me after Return of the Jedi, or even after Star Wars or Empire Strikes Back, who is Luke Skywalker? Oh, he's a hero. He's a savior. He's a brave person. He's all of these things, which he's not here. And again, if you're going to take him there, fine. But it really matters how you get him there into that. You basically did the reverse of Lando. You took Lando and you had him in the sea of gray, and you turned him into a hero. And then you took Luke and you turned him from a hero into the sea of gray. So let's look at Lando's journey versus Luke's. I think that is a good counterpositive sort of thing to do. Where is Luke? Who is Luke Skywalker to you after the credits roll in The Last Jedi?
He's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Because I resonate with what you're saying, you know, One of the things that I think was so strong about the original trilogy coupled with the prequel trilogy is that by the end, Anakin Skywalker was found a way to be a hero again. You know, Space mm-hmm. Hitler finds a way to somehow be a hero again.
Yeah.
Because he puts right what he should have done a long time ago, what he should have done years ago, which was to let Mace Windu take him down and give up what he thought might happen. This time, because of love, the right kind of love, he does what he should have done. Like, there's this beautiful arc here. Luke doesn't have that anymore. He had it, and now it's gone. And the very thing that I feared about doing a sequel trilogy, that you would somehow hurt the character of Luke Skywalker, has irreparably been done now and can never be taken away. This will always be Episode 8. And this will always be Luke. Now, I can say that Episode 9 and a Force Ghost Luke could help redeem some things. But as per who he is here and the actions that he took, I think that I find Luke Skywalker to be wanting. And I didn't want to come away feeling like that. I wanted to find a way for him to be a hero. Now, was his last moment of coming back and, finding a way not to give Kylo the moment that Kylo wanted, which is the face down, that he would get the opportunity then to murder, you know, another father figure in his life. He's already murdered two. He's want to murder this one, so make it a trinity. He's not going to allow that to happen. Like, there's a sense of redemption in that, I think, of Luke not giving Kylo what he wants, and saving what's left of whatever we're calling it, the resistance, rebellion, whatever. The Last Jedi.
Rebellistance.
You know, he's saving the Last Jedi as well. But it also feels like bittersweet, I guess, because he just isn't quite the hero I hoped he was going to be. And look, I know you may be screaming at your iPod or your iPhone or whatever it is you're listening to this with at me.
Your
and
Zune.
Saying, but you know, people fail all the time, and you know, you don't have to be a hero. But look, I'm not talking about real life here. I'm talking about literature. I'm talking about mythology.
Right.
I'm talking about story. And I need my Luke Skywalker to be a hero. Why? Because I already live in a world full of people like Luke. I don't want I don't want Luke reflecting the world I live in. I want Luke inspiring me to the world I want to be in. In the same way that Obi-Wan Kenobi still does that for me, even though he was a failure. He gave up the rest of his life to make sure that Luke was safe. Yoda did the same thing. Leia has given her life to everything that she believes in still. Rey wants to give her life for everything that she believes in. But I wanted Luke to also be that character. And I'm kind of emotional at the moment, but I don't think that's too much to ask that Luke Skywalker shows us a better version of ourselves, not just a reflection of ourselves. Like, I don't mind him reflecting us for a while, but I also want him to really, truly, ultimately show us how to overcome.
Yeah. So I know that, to echo Matt, I'm sure that there are some people who are quite upset at the end of this episode. I hope not. I mean, we're just giving our honest opinions, as we always do. We're just having a fruitful discussion between two friends who love and adore Star Wars as much as you do.
John and I love this. Like, we love Star Wars. It's irrational and ridiculous because it's just a story, but it has had a massive impact on our lives from the moment we were kids, you know? The emotion that you hear in our voice or the frustration or any of those things comes not from a place of hate or any of that. It comes from a place of deep respect and absolute love and adoration for something that we've held on to for a very long time.
And you know what? I'm actually going to call out another thing, because I'm glad you say that, because it's not just a deep, it is actually a thing where Luke's choice in Return of the Jedi during a very incredibly difficult time in my life. And I know that somebody thinks that it's just that I didn't have enough change to buy an ice cream cone. But I'm talking about, this was one of the darkest periods in my life where I was faced with a very difficult set of circumstances and decisions. And Luke Skywalker in Return of the Jedi, the moment where he makes that ultimate act of love and forgiveness and standing up and all of that stuff, actually served. It was a finger hold for me when I was hanging on the side of a cliff. I actually went up watching Return of the Jedi during that dark time. And that is just, I'm just offering that to back up what you're saying, Matt, where this, I cannot overstate how incredibly important this specific character has been to me throughout my life at some very difficult moments. And so to have a film where he makes decisions that I question is in fact a very difficult thing to wrestle with, regardless of whether I'm okay with them or contextualizing it as this is a story. This isn't real life, but this is a story that up to this point has served as an inspirational point and motivating thing in my life. So it can get very tricky to handle.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I highly recommend the George Lucas Interviews book. You can find it on Amazon, and you can really read about it. And what I had kind of mentioned earlier is this idea of why Lucas created Star Wars in the first place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in the end, the thing for me is that I don't look to Star Wars to reflect the universe that I live in my everyday to day life. Star Wars kind of reflects the mythological structure of the universe through archetype to help us see the world wherever we are, but also to see the ways, hopefully, in which to get better. And hopefully, you know, Chris Terrio will find a way to bring that kind of balance back into Episode 9. But with all that said, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also on Instagram under the same name. I am here on the network doing Outpost with Drea Kaufman as we talk through the Harry Potter series one chapter at a time. So I hope you'll join us for that. I'm over on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb. And doing, you mentioned earlier, the 602 Club was our general geek show over there on Trek FM. We talk about as many fandoms as possible. We're not tied to any one fandom, but we've got a lot of great shows there. I hope you'll check them out. Tons of Star Wars content, too, if you're obviously into that. You're listening to a Star Wars podcast. And then last but not least, you can find me on Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk through films, kind of the morals, meanings, and messages, and really kind of putting that all through the lens of faith. So, John, I'm not the only person who has way too much going on. where can everybody find you if they want to yell at you for your opinions or, you know, something else?
I'm used to people yelling at me for my opinions, so you can go find me on your social network of choices, Kessel Junkie, KESSELJUNKIE. And you can also find me right here on this network, co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. And then you can amble on over to Trek.fm, where I'm currently co-hosting Stage 9 with Mike Schindler. And then when I'm not with Matt Rushing or Mike Schindler, I'm co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And that's where you can find me. So with all of that being said, Matt, I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.